Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.
First I was a Catholic girl, loved the mass, I watched the swirl of smoke from candles burning, while Mary looked up yearning. I got confirmed and I confessed, I really felt that I was blessed. Plus I loved my uniform, so did the boy who lived next door. But something changed when I came of age, and all those things I thought were true, someday I'd break the big taboo. Letting go of God. Letting go of God.
And welcome to Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. We're live on WOZO Radio 103.9 LPFM right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. Today is Wednesday, May 16th at 7 o'clock, and if that's not the date and time you're listening to this, then you're listening to a rebroadcast or a podcast. And as usual, we have Wombat coming on the show a little later, but he's not with us right now. He should join us shortly, though. Digital Free Thought Radio Hour is a call-in talk radio show about atheism, free thought, rational thought, humanism, and the sciences. And conversely, we'll also talk about religion, religious faiths, God's holy books, and superstition. And I have a frog in my throat. I'll try to get rid of it. Hold on. Much better. And if you get the feeling that you're the only non-believer in Knoxville, well, you're just not. There are several atheist and free-thinking rationalist groups that exist here in Knoxville, and I'll be telling you a little bit about them later on in the show. Also, did you know that there's an atheist call-in television show that's been broadcasting here in Knoxville and has been for almost 2 years now? Almost 8 years now. And we'll be talking about that too and how you can listen to them. Matter of fact, I'll talk about that right now. The atheist TV show is called Free Thought Forum, and it's being broadcast at the same time as this radio show. It starts at 6:30. We start at 7. If you switch over to Community Access TV, that would be on Channel 12, I think. Comcast Channel 12, Charter Channel 192. It's every Wednesday between 6:30 and 7:30 on Community Access TV. If you don't have TV, you have an iPhone, you can watch it streaming on ctvknox.org. You can also find archives of some of their shows on YouTube, where a fan has been posting them. Just go to YouTube and search for three words, Free Thought Forum Knoxville. Also, if you're interested in getting involved in the TV or the radio show, you can just come to an ASK or RET, Rationalist of East Tennessee, meetup and talk to us about them, about it. You could be our next co-host or guest, right? Well, let's talk about those groups. ASK, Atheist Society of Knoxville, was founded in 2002. So we're in our 16th year now. ASK has over 800 members, and you can find us online at knoxvilleatheist.org. The air conditioner just kicked on. I guess you can hear it. And I do not see the remote to turn it off. Found it, and I still have a bit of a frog. Excuse me. You can go to knoxvilleatheist.org or go directly to meetup.com and search for Knoxville Atheist. Matter of fact, you can go to Google and search for Knoxville Atheist and find it that way. It's just that simple. If you don't live in Knoxville, you should still go to Meetup and search for an atheist group in your town. Don't find one, start one. Also, you can join ASK in person at our weekly meetups, which happen every Tuesday at West Hills. Nope, that's not right either. We meet at Black Horse Pub in Bearden every Tuesday for happy hour and dinner, drinks, and conversation. That's between 5:30, say, and 7:30 or 8. Everybody is welcome as long as you don't come to preach, proselytize, provoke, or punch. Thank you, Atheist Experience. Another large free-thinking group here in Knoxville is the Rationalists of East Tennessee. They've been around for more than 20 years. RET has biweekly presentations and discussions, and they meet at the Pellissippi State Campus near Hardin Valley Road. Excuse me. They meet the first and third Sundays in the Goins Administration Building. Just go to rationalist.org and click on upcoming events for more information. There's also the Sunday Assembly, which started in England just a couple of years ago and now is spread around the world. There's Ty. He's coming in now. Hold on. See if I can unmute you.
And hey, what's up?
Oh, I hear you now.
So, awesome.
Let me make sure that the crew can hear you. Try again. Say something.
Hey, it's the Wombat. What's up, everybody?
Yep.
Just got home.
Yeah, you're coming in. Just fine. I'm going to turn off my Bluetooth so it doesn't get rerouted accidentally.
Okay,
hold on. Bluetooth off. Okay. That should keep you there. We were just talking about the different free thought groups in Knoxville. We were talking about the Humanists of East Tennessee. No, it was the Secular Student Alliance. Actually, I'd scroll too far. Sunday Assembly. Sunday Assembly is a no-God church. In other words, for those who no longer believe in God but still like the fellowship of a church-type gathering. And they meet once a month in Knoxville on the fourth Sunday down at the International Building near the World's Fair Park. Okay. And I guess we can go into the subject now. Our topic today was tactics, I believe. Is that right?
Sorry, just walking through my door, turning off the alarm. Hey, so what was our topic again?
Tactics.
Tactics
that the apologists use to try to persuade non-believers to become believers or different believers to become their believers. And what are some of the tactics that they use? We'll be talking about that in the show tonight.
Okay,
and if you'd like to join the conversation, our number is 865-333-5937. That's 333-5937 here in Knoxville. Okay, go ahead, Wombat.
All right, cool. So the last topic that we were talking about on the show was topics that you or not necessarily tactics, but strategies you should avoid because that don't work necessarily well on people who believe and like things you should try to avoid.
Uh-huh.
And I think this is just a more direct response. This topic is just a bit more of a direct response to that topic as a whole because what are the tactics that apologists, particularly like religious people, use
right.
to try to convince non-believers, including atheists alike, or atheists that are, you know, firm in their position. The reason why I brought this up was I am a part of this weird Facebook group that likes to post videos of what the latest Christians are saying. Hey, how are you doing, buddy? See, I just got home. My cat's like rubbing up all over me.
Huh.
But the thing is, the video was talking about tactics to use on non-believers to get them to convert to Christianity, specifically.
Uh-huh.
And the method that he was using was called Columbo tactics. And Columbo tactics, as he described it, are basically just asking questions that seem like very casual, that get them to question their position on not believing in God, and show them that their position is unreliable so that they convert to Christianity. And I'm like, wait a second, this sounds very, very similar to something that I do in the hobby, except the inverse of it, where we try to talk to, like, people who do believe and show them that, you know, I don't know, is a perfectly fine starting place to be, or if you don't, especially if you don't have enough conclusive information. So I showed this with some of my friends on my Street Epistemology Facebook group, and the video is basically what to do if you're confronted with the Columbo tactics. That's what they call it. Columbo tactics. Columbo being like a detective on a radio, detective on an old school TV show who also used to ask questions to get people to like ultimately reveal that they were the murderer or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So
did you happen to notice at the beginning of the video that he was talking about the burden of proof and shifting it? He says, for example, if you make a claim and the guy asks you to provide some evidence for it, he's shifting the burden of proof, which is absolutely not what it's all about. If you make a claim, you should have evidence for that claim. And asking somebody else to prove that your claim is wrong or proving it negative is shifting the burden of proof. So if you make a claim about something and you don't have any evidence and the guy asks you for evidence, he's totally within his rights to do that. Did
sure.
you see that in the video? Did you notice that in the
yeah,
video?
Yeah, I want to highlight that. So he gave a three-step method to the Colombo tactics. Uh-huh. First step is ask questions. And mm-hmm. I thought, not a problem, because you want to understand the person that you're talking to.
Right.
And then he said his second step is to shift the burden of proof onto them.
Uh-huh.
And that's a very interesting thing, because normally one of the things that we try to avoid is adopting the burden of proof if the person we're talking to mm-hmm. has the evidence claim. Mm-hmm. But he was explicitly talking about how to shift the burden of proof from I believe in a God and a God exists to making the person who doesn't believe in a God have the burden of proof. Like his target was shifting the burden of proof from himself onto the
right.
person
mm-hmm.
that didn't believe.
Right.
And it was written right there in black and white. And then he went on to talk about how that's actually existing.
Yeah.
And then I went down
to make a comment on the video about that, and he had conveniently disabled all comments. So what he said stood no matter what.
Right. It's always a telling sign whenever that happens.
Uh-huh.
But I thought it was really interesting to not only acknowledge the fact that he had the burden of proof, didn't want to address it, and was willing to actually push it onto the person who didn't believe and didn't have the right to answer
right.
his burden of proof anyway.
Maybe we should give any listeners a way to watch that video. Do you have the title of the video or maybe how to find it on YouTube?
Yes, absolutely. And I'll give it after the break.
Okay.
How about that?
Sounds good.
Okay. So shifting the burden of proof, just so everyone can catch up, a burden of proof is basically the standard of evidence you have to meet to make a convincing case for what you say is the case.
Mm-hmm.
So if I said, hey, I think all bagels are red, or I think all bagels have raisins in them. If I say all bagels have raisins in them, I've made a claim, and
right.
I have to substantiate that claim if I want you to believe me
uh-huh.
with a certain standard of proof. And if I can't meet that burden of proof, then you are completely in your right not to be convinced of the information that I'm putting out.
Right.
You could say, well, I don't believe you. You haven't made a convincing case that all bagels have raisins in them. I, in fact, am aware of some bagels that don't, and they're uh-huh. right in front of me right now. So mm-hmm. prove to me that these have raisins in them. You have a high burden of proof to me. But if I said something that I could meet my burden of proof, for example, I don't know, like I have a doctorate in biochemistry, and I was able to show you, you know, my academic record and my PhD and the videos of me graduating
mm-hmm.
and my job that I got and I can talk to you about some of the research that I did and I can show you some articles. I feel like I've done a better job meeting that standard of evidence or that burden of proof to make a more compelling case for you to believe me when I say that.
Sure.
And there's a big difference between someone saying I believe in something that's natural and someone saying I believe in something supernatural, because if someone believes in something that's natural, they can provide a natural amount of evidence for it. But it's very hard to show a supernatural amount of evidence to substantiate a supernatural claim. So the person who believes in a God has a supernatural claim that they're making that they can't substantiate because they lack the needed tools to investigate the supernatural. And so instead of addressing that fact for himself, he instead shifts the burden of claim, the burden of proof onto the non-believer and says, well, prove that God's not real. Prove that I'm wrong if I say I believe in God. And if you can't, then I'm right by default and a God exists.
Right.
And that's inherently a fallacy.
Well, they don't realize they're in the exact same boat if they want to say, well, they have to prove that, like, Allah is not real before the, either that or they have to accept that he's real or any of the gods
right.
of Hinduism. You know, they don't realize that the same argument can be used against them.
Right. Not only that, but like even if they try to take it down a bit, it's like, well, listen, I'm not talking about God. I'm talking more about like, you know, souls. Like, can we agree that souls exist? Like, that's still a supernatural claim. Like, do we have evidence that a soul exists? What do you think?
No, we don't. It's never been proven. Even in 2,000 years of claiming that that they are real, religions all over the world have never met the burden of proof even for a soul.
Not only that, but there are people who think that there's scientific proof that substantiates that souls exist.
Yeah.
And the issue with that is that, you know, if a soul does exist scientifically, there should be, you know, very well-documented, peer-reviewed articles on the concept.
Uh-huh.
And the weird thing is, and let me tell you this, the weird thing is, I was talking to a lady before. I have this interview where I just talked to random people. And she said that she did not believe in God and she didn't believe in souls, but she was also 100% confident that souls didn't exist.
Didn't
exist. And I want to make this note. Huh?
Didn't exist.
She knew for 100% certainty that a soul and God did not exist. And I just wanted to throw this out as a warning to just like our non-believing listeners as well.
Yeah.
Like, when you've reached the absolute point of certainty, you are at a much more shakier foundation than you were if you were, like, at least open to the concept of you being wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked this lady, like, listen, when you say you're 100% confident, you're now putting – when you're saying like you're 100% confident that souls don't exist, you're unnecessarily adopting a burden of proof. In that,
No. Still, even in that case, okay, go ahead, finish.
Let me come back to it, though. You're stating an absolute claim that you cannot.
Okay,
be
well, that's different.
This.
No, that's different.
Yes.
Because you're talking about Gnosticism versus theism. You're talking about atheism versus, you know, you're talking
about
knowledge versus
confidence.
You're talking about beliefs versus claims.
Okay.
No.
Neither. I'm just going to throw out a statement, and I just got to say the whole statement before it gets, you know, cut. The statement is a confidence claim. It's not about a belief. It's not about knowledge. It's how certain are you that this is true? And if someone comes out with absolute certainty,
yeah,
it's a harder position to defend than
mm-hmm.
one where they're at least open to being wrong. Because it tends to be the case that people who have evidence-based beliefs need to be open to the idea that evidence might change in the future or new evidence might be presented to them such that their position can no longer be absolute. And to have an absolute position that they're claiming is based on evidence is inherently a valuable position to be on. And that's what I want to address.
Okay.
Now, what I'm saying is,
you kept saying knowledge. She had absolute knowledge. And, you know, that's...
Yeah, my issue isn't the word knowledge. My issue is the 100%.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. Like, you could say I have 90%. I'm 90% sure that I know X, Y, Z. And my issue isn't with the know or the believe.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you think you believe something, I'm fine with you believing it. But if you say you're 100% blah, 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 my whole premise is, how can you be 100% certain about this? Like, you should never, in my opinion, there's very few things that you can be 100% sure about or 0% sure
right.
about. And we should always stay open to the idea that things can change, whether it's belief or knowledge, or anything in between. I think it's really important to at least be open to the idea that we can change our minds in the future, be willing to be open-minded,
sure.
and not be dogmatic in any walk of our life.
I don't know is always a valid answer.
Exactly. And I think it's not only a valid answer, it's the best answer when you don't have enough conclusive evidence.
Right.
And that goes to the same thing with the existence of a soul. I think we don't have enough evidence to substantiate the existence of a soul. So no one is in a good place to be confident that a soul exists, same ways as no one could be justified at being 100% confident that a soul doesn't exist, because there's nothing to substantiate that amount of confidence. The best place to be in that position is, I don't know. Because then
yeah.
it's the person
or
who
I'm
claims
not sure.
that a soul exists.
Either way, yeah. As long as you're not, not stating certainty.
Exactly. And if your position is, I don't know if a soul exists, at least you're open to it. But then the person who says that it does exist has the burden of proof.
Mm-hmm. Because he's making a claim.
That demonstrate on their own regard
right.
that a soul actually does exist.
They're making a positive claim, right?
Right. And you can be, in my opinion, I think you can be nearly absolutely sure that you don't know something. And if someone claims that they know something beyond that,
mm-hmm.
they have a burden of proof
right.
to me.
Exactly.
And that's the argument I'm trying to present.
Mm-hmm.
I say, when you are approaching a theist, your position shouldn't be, you're wrong, theist, because I know the opposite is true, or the inverse is true. It shouldn't be, well, I think you're wrong because Christianity has this and this in the Bible. Like, that Christian's going to try to feed those opinions out of you until you get a point that you try to make across, and then start shifting the burden of proof on you
right.
to address those opinions. Your base should be, I don't know if you're telling me the truth or not. Do you have a convincing demonstration of whatever you're telling me to be and how that's actually the case? Because if you can't convince me that that's true, why should I believe you? And if you can, please present a reasonable method that got you to that conclusion.
Right.
Because if you have one, that will be really great. And that's what the goal should be. People are coming up with good reasons to believe what they believe.
Right. And faith,
that's the better position.
And faith ain't one of them. excuse my French.
And faith is not reliable. Faith tends not to be very reliable.
No,
only in the sense that I can reach multiple conclusions that almost contradict each other,
right,
using that as a method.
All religions do rely on faith to prove that they are true, and they can't all be true. They contradict each other. They make contradictory claims.
And just as I have, if I've not made it clear enough, I think there's, you're right about, you know, knowledge deals with agnosticism, and like belief deals with atheism. And I think before we even get into those topics, I also like to throw in the concept of like certainty. Certainty is just a matter of confidence you have that something's true or not,
yeah,
or that you know something or don't know something. It's a meta weight. It's not dealing with knowledge or belief. It's just about how certain you are, which really is just a measure of how open are you to at least at learning more. And if you close yourself off from that, regardless of whether it's a knowledge or a belief claim, whether you're an atheist or a theist, being closed is not a good position to be honest or intellectually honest.
Right.
And that's why I encourage most people to at least try to be intellectually honest with what they believe or what they know to be true.
Uh-huh.
Because it's okay to say you don't know, and it's okay to have a little bit less than absolute certainty on almost everything, because that gives you the opportunity to learn more things about everything.
Right. Right. You have an open mind at that point, or at least somewhat of an open mind. If you come up and say, I can't, my mind cannot be changed on the subject like so many theists do, then they can no longer learn anything. You know, their mind is set. I remember reading in a book from, I think it was from that guy, was 1930s, I think it was, 1925, and the Scopes trial, this WGN.
Oh, I know that.
WGN reporter came to Tennessee,
uh-huh,
and he went to a Holy Rollers meeting, and he wrote a book on, or at least wrote a chapter on that particular meeting. And he said he met a woman who was telling everybody that they didn't need to read anything but the Bible. And he asked her about that, and she said, well, if it's true, it's in the Bible. And if it's not in the Bible, then all likelihood it's not true. And if I read something else that's not true, it's going to take my mind off the Bible. So she said, I mean, it was a circular argument, but what it came down to, you know, no book was trustworthy other than the Bible. So there's no reason to read anything besides the Bible. So, yeah, it was pretty bad. Anyway, if you get a chance, who was it? H.L. Mencken was the author of that book.
Well, I can tell you this right now. I'm about to release a video tomorrow that is an interview with a guy who thinks we should replace literally every single law on earth with the Ten Commandments.
Yeah.
Like all international law, all, you know, commerce law, all gun owning laws, everything. Like all laws, Ten Commandments. And so in a short, literal 5-minute chat with the guy, I'm able to get him from the 100% certainty that all laws should be replaced with the Bible to, I don't know how to answer that question anymore.
Oh, good for you.
And I think it's a great video.
Yeah, I have to watch that. But I mean,
yeah,
there's
only
like 6 or 7 of the Ten Commandments that actually deal with morality. The others are,
sure,
thou shalt not create graven images, thou shalt not have any other God before me, you know, that type of thing. That there's only like 6 that are left that actually address how you should act toward each other.
But you know, the guy that I was talking to, he wasn't like an old man. He was a guy about my age, perhaps even younger.
Yeah.
He had a kid and he had his wife there.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just really surprised that, you know, everyone's going around with these beliefs, not
right,
necessarily as
right,
hardcore Christian beliefs,
mm-hmm,
the like Ten Commandments, but maybe even like an atheist who believes, you know, well, listen, I don't like the fact that the Bible says this, therefore all holy books are wrong, or I disagree with God, therefore I don't think any gods exist. Or like they'll take a small thing and
mm-hmm,
blow it up to an absolute
right,
belief,
uh-huh,
that maybe they haven't really considered fully. And what I'm saying is, it's as far as that belief goes, that's fine. It's a question of belief. Wherever you are on that map, wherever that puts you on that map, that's fine. But don't have absolute certainty in it. At least be open to the idea. Even like with that guy who thought all laws should be replaced with a, you know, Holy Bible, he was able to at least be open-minded about the idea to the point where, at the end of the conversation, he was able to get rid of his absolute beliefs in it.
Yeah, after talking to you, I mean, how long would he have gone? I mean, you were at least able to broach the subject with him. How many people in his circle of friends would have done that? even if they could have it. They might be in the same information bubble he is, and not even have the equipment to broach it.
Yeah, I know. And how many of us are in information bubbles? Like, is there anything that, like, we just take it for granted? Is there, like, anything that's fundamental to us that we're not thinking about to be true? And it's stuff like that that the Christian who's using these Columbo tactics are banking on, or at least hoping for, because when they shift the burden of proof onto you, what they're not targeting is their beliefs on God. They're targeting these absolute beliefs that they sniff out in your mind, and hopefully you point them out. And or when you present your absolute beliefs to them, they'll use the same tactics, or not necessarily tactics, but strategies that I would use as a person who's genuinely interested in trying to have people reach a true conclusion, or at least a more reasonable position, to break those down. And then my final foundational, you know, state is, it's good to say I don't know when you don't know things, and that's totally fine. But the Christians who's using the Columbo tactics foundation is, when you say I don't know, I'm going to insert my God beliefs.
Right.
And present that as the answer to the claim of why you don't know, as a better resolution to this conversation, and hope that by the end of the conversation you're more willing to believe in my God than you were when you started the conversation. And that is inherently a dishonest conversation.
It is. Someone. Yeah. We talk. I talk a lot on Facebook debate sites. So I'm constantly, you're talking about your information bubble. I'm not stuck in a bubble. I constantly, you know, expose myself to other views through the debate sites. But it's amazing that in the last, like, 17 years or 15 years that I've been in there, that nobody has given me any good reason to believe. I mean, the reasons they give me are so easily debunked that I actually wrote a book about it just to put them all down on paper.
Right.
You know, people can look them up anytime they want to. And
you
course,
know what you brought up?
Digital Free Thought blog is all about. Anyway, go ahead.
I was saying you brought up a really good point. Like, how do you get out of the bubble if you think you might be in a bubble? Some good ways are obviously investigating different topics. I talked with a lady who I asked her that exact same question, but she says, like, you know, do you research just more things that you're brought up to believe, but like on a bunch of other stuff. And don't stop. Like, it's not an end goal. It's
right.
Like a constant thing that you constantly do. Facebook is also a good way. Like, if you just like meeting different groups or talking to different people or debating different people on Facebook, go for it. In my opinion, I don't find debates to be a productive way to have a conversation with someone. And so what I've tried to do was my SC groups, and those groups are also available on Facebook. There are some theists that join the SC group. And what we'll have is not so much a debate, but more of like a spirited conversation between the both of us.
Uh-huh.
Maybe one-on-one out in front of an audience where we just try to think about the methodologies of what we're trying to bring. And what helps us, and I'm also part of a smaller street epistemology group called the League of SC Reviewers. And we're really nerdy. And it's one girl in Finland, one guy in South Africa, and me. And what we do is we each make videos at different parts of the world, and we present the videos to each other, and we critique each other, because we think that by through critical feedback of ourselves and our friends and toward the effort of trying to build ourselves to be stronger, we can get a better point of view of what we believe and try to get ourselves out of that bubble that you mentioned.
That's
really important.
Very good. Congratulations. Way to do that, because you'll need feedback, and apparently you're getting it. Not only that, but it helps you improve your techniques that you're going to work on.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And we're at the bottom of the hour, so I guess it's a good time to take a little break. We'll be playing Quiet Company's Beautiful Lies, and then we'll be back in probably 5 minutes. So enjoy your break. We'll be back in a little bit. And yes, it is playing. It's just not loud for some reason. It's just... There we go. And I'll be back in a little bit. Bye.
They were sleeping on my fan while I was dreaming of you. And daughter, I once had such desire to believe that our lives had been planned out by an unseen deity, but you don't have to.
to waste your time holding on to beautiful lies. Daughter, I once knew that everything that I believed, it was good and fair and true and consistent with my needs. But daughter, I am wrong almost as often as I'm right. So daughter, just be strong enough to make up your own mind, 'cause you don't have to waste your time holding on to beautiful lies. No, you don't have to waste your time holding on to beautiful lies.
Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on Wozo 103.9 LPFM in Knoxville, Tennessee. Feel free to join in on the conversation at 865-333-5937. That's 865-333-5937. And now, back to the show. Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.
Simply the best.
And we're back. This is Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. We're on WOZO Radio 103.9 LPFM live here in Knoxville, Tennessee. Today is Wednesday, May 16th. It's about 7:30 now, so if you're not listening to it at that date and time, you probably listen to a podcast. So if you want to call in and join us while we are live, you can call us at 865-333-5937 for this Atheist Call-In Radio Show. That's 333-5937. Phone lines are open. And we're back. Wombat, where are we going now?
Hey, we're back. So we're going to talk about the next tactic that was described in the video that I said I'd tell you about. The video is called What If the Columbo Tactic is Used on Me? It's a video on YouTube by a guy named Greg, G-R-E-G, Koch, K K-O-U-K. And normally I wouldn't like to give too much attention to this guy, but the fact that he's just so candid about avoiding answering questions and shifting the burden of proof on non-believers is just really, really great. Also, he does the video in, I guess, his garage filled with tools, and he's like 1 foot away from like giant hacksaws all around him, and it's just like...
really, this show is about tools.
But anyway, the video again is what to do if the Columbo tactic is used on me.
And we've been talking about this particular video through the entire show. It's not just that we're now going to start talking about it. That's the one that we've been talking about.
Exactly.
Right.
So what are some of the tactics that he says he likes to use on non-believers to get them to become Christians, more or less? One, he says he uses Columbo tactics, which he broke into three rules. First rule is ask them a lot of questions to understand what the position is. And I like that idea because it's good to understand people before you start to try to, you know, alter what they think or ask them questions about what they believe.
Right.
Get to know what the people. And I think that's hugely important.
Mm-hmm.
The second one, which we mentioned in the first half, was shifting the burden of proof from yourself to the non-believer. His claim was, if I say I believe in a God, I basically don't want to have to address that, prove that to him. I want them to refute God and then shift the burden on them to demonstrate why their refutation is actually valid. And once we can show that it's not valid, then I can assert my God claim. That's terrible tactic.
It's not the way it works.
Completely dishonest.
Uh-huh.
The third basis is, basically, he says, avoid answering questions on your side. Basically, his position is avoid answering questions more than most part.
Uh-huh.
So if you think the non-believer starts asking you a series of questions, cut them off, which he calls
reversing the Columbo method. In other words, they don't have to answer any questions. They just have to ask you questions. To prove that they're
right.
God.
Make it a one street conversation,
right.
One way street.
That's
also bad. So you saw some of those clips. What did you think about some of the things that he was saying about that last
clip? What's funny is that they used to do it all the time, and there's still people out there that do it. The banana man, what's his name? Can't remember his name.
Who cares?
Ray Comfort. And then there's the guy who put up the Ark Museum in Kentucky.
Ken Ham.
They're real bad about it. And, there's another guy I'm thinking about. He spent 9 years in prison for tax evasion. He's a real big evangelical apologist. Him and his son, I can't remember his name, though. Kent Hovind. I knew it would come to me. But anyway, they all will sit in front of you and ask you just a string of questions leading you right down a garden path and only allow you to answer yes or no to the questions. And they are very crafty questions, you know, so that you, if you answer all the questions and you get to the last one, then you have to believe in Jesus and accept him as your Savior. But what gets me is they reverse this in the video. He says, don't let them do that to you, says the preacher. Don't let the atheist talk to you. You know, he just ask you one question after another one, leading you to a presupposed answer, which is what they do all the time. It's I don't know what the technique is called, but when you claim your opponent is doing the bad stuff that you are actually doing, and that's exactly what he was doing in the video. Claiming atheists do the stuff that they do. Of course, it's a big, conservative tactic as well. They'll point to the liberal and say, look what he's doing, when it's actually the stuff they're doing. Anyway, I'll get off
my... You get off your soapbox.
Yeah.
I like to say it like this. If you're asking dishonest questions,
mm-hmm.
you're having a dishonest discussion.
Right.
And why have a dishonest discussion if you could have an honest discussion?
Right. And
in order to do that, all you have to do is ask honest questions.
Right.
A good way that I try to do that is by asking open-ended questions. So like I said, I have a hobby where I have a conversation with people about their faith. But I wouldn't say things like, is your faith reliable? Yes or no? Tell me. Like,
mm-hmm.
I wouldn't segment them into one or the other answer. Instead,
right.
I'd be like, is your faith reliable?
How reliable?
So?
Yeah.
Can you tell me how? Like, what would be some good ways to show that it's reliable?
Mm-hmm.
I get them to, I ask them open-ended questions where they're free to think about what they believe in a slow and productive way to get people to really assess what they want. And if they come up with a good response, I want to hear it. And I think that's the great part about it, because I'm not asking a question that I already know the answer to, or I know a set of answers to lead towards the conclusion.
Right.
I'm asking an open-ended question, hopefully have a really good conversation where I can hopefully learn something from these guys.
Well, you're asking questions, so we'll actually tell you something about the person that you're talking to, not just push them into a corner and then define the corner that they're in.
Right.
So you're actually learning about that person.
I thought it was really cool about how the line that he gives for when he says he feels like he's being led by a non-believer. So, like, he says he doesn't want to ever answer questions from non-believers because they tend to, like, lead to one to the other way. And he says his line for avoiding that is, he ever feels like he's getting a bunch of questions thrown at him is, listen, I feel like you're leading me down a point. Leading me down the trail.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to just get to the point already?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I see you're trying to do something right here. What's your ultimate point?
Mm-hmm.
Can we just get there? And that's his line. And I thought, well, that's not really intimidating. I mean, if I was presented with that question or mm-hmm. his intimidation to, like, basically get to the point,
yeah.
I would say, my point is to try to understand your position on this God claim a little bit better. I'm trying to see if you have a reliable method. How did you get to this conclusion? And is that methodology that you used reliable? And if so, can we talk about how this could be?
Well, that's the one thing they don't want to do. They don't want to examine their methodology.
Let's learn more about it.
Yeah, they certainly don't want to examine their methodology. They just want to push their final answer to you.
Right.
And the thing about it is, if you keep asking them a bunch of questions that will lead up to something, and they're actually probing and inquisitive questions that are fair questions, it will tell them by the time they get to the end whether or not they have a valid position, but they don't want to examine that path very much. They just want to hold the position without justification.
This actually is a good point that you brought up, because I remember talking to a guy 2 weeks ago. I was doing my table setup thing, and the guy came up to me and he says, I asked him what something he believes to be true. He says, 100% confident, Jesus Christ is our Savior. And he started a preaching thing, and we talked about this last week.
Mm-hmm.
But the guy who's just, you know, don't let him just preach at you nonstop. Feel free to interject into the conversation.
Yeah.
But afterwards, when he was done, I asked him a hypothetical question of, like, you know, so what would it take for you to, like, figure out if you were wrong? Like, what would be good ways for you to be able to assess if this wasn't, like, necessarily your case? Like, are you able to determine that? And, like, what would be some ways that you would use to determine that? And he says, well, I don't answer hypotheticals.
Yeah, apparently doesn't answer much.
So, like, I didn't really know what to do with that. He's, like, basically saying, like, well, if it's hypothetical, therefore I don't have to answer it. So it's not, because it's not the case. I'm like, as far as truth goes, and this is a big point, this is maybe, like, my motivation point, like, the truth doesn't care if you question it, you know?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Because you can question truth, you can test truth, it's still going to be true.
Yeah.
And
it's like
it holds
up. I used to say that truth does not fear investigation.
Exactly.
Because if it's true, it's going to be true no matter what. And, you know, I've talked to
you. Know what does fear investigation? Lies.
Right.
Big, big fat lies. Mm-hmm. Fat, delicious, make you feel good lies, make you feel important,
mm-hmm.
nice and comfortable lies, nice, comfy, furry, soft lies. They hate being investigated. And as a result, people come up with really nutty ways of protecting themselves from even simple, you know, investigations that just involve fair questions with a stranger or even, like, you know, meaningful sentiments from their loved ones. Like, it's to the point where they don't want to be told that they're wrong on the conclusion, not so much because they don't want to have an honest debate, but because really they don't want to get rid of the conclusion.
Right.
Because
they're comfortable with it. Mm-hmm.
Right. It's comforting.
Yeah.
And a lot of people don't like being taken out of that comfort zone or that bubble, like I said. And the best way to, like I said, get burst out of that is to use means of getting out of your bubble, communicate with people, do research on your own. If you want to do it privately, do it on Facebook. There's lots of private groups that you can go join on Facebook where you can have these kinds of conversations. And I mean mm-hmm. conversations, not necessarily debate them, which
right.
you can have as well.
Mm-hmm.
But there are places where you can have meaningful conversations. I suggest Street Epistemology Group or any S-E group, S-E, letter S, letter E group, where you can have role-playing conversations with believers and non-believers who are genuinely interested in trying to figure out good ways to come to true conclusions.
Right. Right. And, but the thing about it is you have to be interested in coming to a true conclusion and not be afraid of the answer to even start down that road. And a lot of people aren't.
Yeah.
But some people are. I mean, look at all the people who are in the clergy project. You know, these are people who are still preaching from the pulpit but no longer believe. They at least took the steps to learn the different positions, and from that they reached the conclusion that there's no gods, even though that their whole livelihood and calling was built around that premise.
Right. Anyway. I also feel like when it's with the clergy project in particular, these are guys who aren't just, you know, non-theists who were convinced maybe down the road that a god didn't exist. Mm-hmm. These are guys who, you know, drank the juice. Like they
right.
understood the Bible. They mm-hmm. learned it to the point where they could teach it to other people. They knew the text in and out. They knew the sacraments,
mm-hmm.
and still could not find, after an examination of the methodologies, a reasonable route to reach their conclusions
right.
that they had when they were a theist. And I think that's an important thing to note
yeah.
because it's like a lot of people don't even put that much effort into studying
right.
what they believe.
Right. It's amazing how many atheists that have told me that they came to atheism because they read the Bible. And,
yeah,
and so many Christians don't read it. They just go to church and let the pastor tell them the good parts, and they never know about
right.
the bad parts.
Right. And one of the biggest issues is like the, how do I put it, the social aspect that comes with clout for a person who says they've read the Bible. And maybe not read it, but just made the noises of the words for all the letters in the book in
right.
their head as they flip pages. But to, like, actually read the Bible and to even go as far as from the clergy part, to actually study it and still come to the conclusion after studying that, you know what, I don't have a good reason to believe this anymore. Holy crap,
right.
what do I... Oh, excuse me.
Yeah.
Holy smokes, what do I do? Who can I go to talk about this? The Clergy Project does have an open forum where you're able to go to them on their website and actually see honest back and forth debate with new visitors who are asking them about the revelations that they've had and like the means that they're using to try to like reach out to even more people who are in the same situation. There are people who are pastors who don't believe but still just do it because it's the only job. They have
right,
no other means.
Right, they have no other skills. Yeah, and
they have no other skills.
But there are other jobs that can use the skills that they have. They have office skills.
Absolutely.
They have writing skills. They have publication and speaking skills.
Motivation skills. Yeah,
right.
Training
they
skills.
They really do.
There's a lot of things about
that's why the Clergy Project is there, is to help people to make that transition from preaching to a secular livelihood.
And
let them come out of their closet that they've been living in, living a lie, as it were, preaching from the pulpit something they no longer believe to be true.
And I just want to make a differentiation between the tactics that, like the Christian in the video that we're describing used versus the tactics, not to just say tactics, but like the strategy or the routes of reason that street epistemology user or the clergyman on those forums might use. The ultimate goal of a street epistemologist or one of those clergymen is to show that it's good to have reliable reasons to believe in things. And sometimes I don't know is a totally safe place to be and a good place to be in most cases where you don't have enough evidence. And there's nothing more that's being sold than that. And if you agree with that position, then we're fine, because sometimes when you don't know something, it's good just to say you don't know something and use a stepping stone to learn more things
mm-hmm.
and as an unbiased point. But
right.
the position of the Christian, in the video at least that we were showing, isn't so much that. It's not only once it's waiting for you to say I don't know so that I will have an opportunity to insert my God belief in that place. And when I insert my God belief on top of your I don't know or your ignorance, I'll have more leverage to demonstrate that my case is true and that your position is unsound. And they've done that for free, or they're basically doing that with the hopes that they can get away with it for free, because they still have not met their burden of proof, and they're doing it, and they're holding the conversation in a manner that's ultimately dishonest
right.
because they don't want to answer questions,
yeah.
and they don't want to have to be saddled with any responsibility for the things that they're throwing out. And that's inherently a dishonest conversation. So even if it looks similar to SE, I don't think it's SE at all, and I don't think it's worth
a means
for these people to pick up. But I will say this. The one thing I do like about it is that the first rule does exist, which is understand the person that you're talking to.
Right.
And if they mean that genuinely, I think that is more better than someone who doesn't even want to have the conversation with someone who might believe something.
Right, or evangelicals who only want one side of the conversation to go forward. But,
I mean,
how telling is it that when you watch a video like that, and here's a preacher, a religious man, who is sitting there telling you, one, don't answer questions. Two, don't allow them to carry the conversation. Three, shift the burden of proof to them. You know, I mean, these tactics right there by his own words will tell you that it's not an honest thing to do. People just don't see it.
Why do you think his comment section is locked?
Right. He didn't want any questions coming from the other side.
Not only that, but he was just trying to sell his book. And I probably figured that he's cut off the comment sections because after a point it just came to...
If he ever had it open. He may not have had it open. You don't know when they...
Good point.
Usually when it says the comments have been turned off, there's usually a two or three there, you know, if he had it on for a while. But there were no comments. It was just the video and comments have been turned off. So I don't think he's ever had it on.
There are people out there with agendas. How about this? We can summarize them.
Yeah.
And it's a question of, are the agendas getting in the way of their desire to have an honest debate with someone or an honest conversation with someone? And if that's the case, then you're never going to have a meaningful, productive conversation with that person.
Mm-hmm.
And so something to measure ahead of time is if you're trying to have a conversation with someone, what's your goals? Are your goals not to answer their questions, to shift the burden of proof onto them, and to basically sell them your religious belief when they admit that it's okay to not know something? Or are your goals to show them that having reasonable reasons to believe in things are fine, and if you don't have those, it's totally fine to say you don't know when you don't know something.
Right.
And that's it. But not just say, hey, quit and go home, but say, hey, now at least you're in a place where you know you are lacking some information. That's totally fine to be in when you don't have enough information to come to.
Right.
And while you're encouraged to learn more, having I don't know as an answer is not a bad thing. In fact, it's sometimes the best answer until you can get better information. Until then, sometimes it's better just to wait until then.
Yeah.
But if someone comes to you and says, hey, I believe that this is true, and your position is I don't know if that's true, it's up to the person who's saying I believe it's true to present evidence to convince you. And until they do, the best position is still I don't know.
And
they're not right by default.
Yeah, a lot of it is the point that they want to convince you. I mean, you know, if I'm not sure about something and I talk about it and somebody says, yeah, I'm not sure about it either, I say, okay, we're neither one. But they're not sure. I mean, if they get in a conversation with you, you know, they don't know, but they're sure enough to be adamant about you believing it. And that's what kills me. I don't know how many times I've been on Facebook or talking to a theist, and they'll say, well, how do you think the universe came into existence? You know, it doesn't really matter what I think brought the universe into existence. The God claims and the Jesus claims have to stand on their own evidence, and they're trying to knock down my belief, even though I haven't expressed it. You know, I could think it's universe creating pixies for all I know. I don't know. But they still, you know, if yours sounds incredible, then it's not credible. So they just, you know, say, oh, what's funny is that they claim to know even though they don't. And that's where the problem comes in. Even their preachers don't know, but they claim they do. You know, where did the universe come from? God did it. Simple answer. But
that's a great point.
It just adds more questions to the flow. You know, where did God come from? Did he have a family? Did he have a race of people? You know, are there more of them? Are there one to every galaxy? There's 100,000 questions when you use the word God. And every religion, usually every person who believes in God, answers that question differently.
Right. You have to think about this, like when a preacher comes out in front of you, like the even the firm the term preacher means. Like, they're professing something. They have a position, and they're making a claim. Like, a preacher is a person who makes a claim for a living, basically. But think of it as, like, a guy with a billboard that says, hey, I believe that God is real. Convince me otherwise. And your job is not, as the non-believer, to try to convince them that the God is not real.
Mm-hmm.
Because then you're playing their game.
Mm-hmm.
What your job is to say, I'm not convinced that you're right when you say that a God is real. Convince me. And if you can convince me, then I'll believe it. If you have to, what needs to be convincing for me is a reasonable argument or a reasonable demonstration of your claim.
Right.
And if you don't have that, I'm fine with I don't know as the
current
answer that I have until I have better evidence. Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with I don't know as the answer.
And there are many atheists out there who say, you know, make the claim that there is no God. You know, there's no God. Well, if they're making a claim, they have the burden of proof. I don't go that far. I just say I don't believe there's God. And in other words, I'm an atheist. And if you're...
And you can demonstrate that you don't believe that there's a God.
Right, well,
so totally
as much as you can
say.
Demonstrate your beliefs at all, the only person in the world who knows what I believe is me. And if I say I don't believe in God, then, you know, I'm the one reporting on the person who knows, you know.
So, right.
But anyway, so I try to avoid those claims.
I think you can know that you don't believe something to a very high level of certainty.
Right.
I think I'm playing with these ideas, but I think knowing that you don't believe in something or do believe in something is, like, pretty high. But I also think that the knowledge claim is maybe even higher. Because if I don't know something, I can actually demonstrate that to other people far more reliably than the lack of belief. Because maybe I can even be fooling myself.
Well, it goes
over. I can't demonstrate that I don't know I know I can demonstrate that I know something. I know that I can't demonstrate.
Can you demonstrate that somebody else believes in something or not? How many times do you
hear
theists say that there's no such thing as an atheist? That everybody believes in God, like they know. You know, they're sitting there in their little knowledge bubble and making claims about other people's knowledge and beliefs. And there's only one person who knows what they believe. It's like that first time I told a person that I was an atheist, and she said, oh, no, you're not. Like she knew what I believed or not. You know?
I'll throw this one out real quick. There's since we're getting pretty close to the end. There's a guy on YouTube, I'm not going to promote his channel, but he has a channel where he basically has a sign and he goes to colleges, and the sign will say something controversial, like, I believe in abortion rights, or, prove that I'm wrong, or I believe that there's only two genders, prove that I'm wrong. So he'll go both sides, and what he's basically just doing is, he has two chairs, and people will read the sign and be like, well, I'll talk to you about this. And what he's trying to do is show that people get, like, too excited in these conversations and start calling them names. Because he's never, like, his goal is not to have an interesting conversation. His goal is to just make people angry and get views and laugh at them, basically, afterwards.
Yeah.
So, like again, the intentions that you have going into the conversation mean so much more than the conversation's conclusion. Because things can happen during a conversation. And you can work on practicing to have a more productive one as you go on, as long as you, like, stay calm and avoid these tactics that we had talked about for the last 3 weeks.
Yeah.
But the intentions that you have going into them are so important, because those dictate truly the level of honesty that you're going to have during the entire conversation. If you go in with these honest intentions and you ask the honest questions and you go in there with an agenda to try to, like, sell your channel or sell your book or sell your God, you're not going to have an honest, eye-opening a conversation with someone else who might actually have something really interesting to tell you that could actually lower you down in convincing or confidence.
Just end up being a waste of breath.
You're so dogmatically closed on your position.
Yeah, just a waste of breath. Well, I'm getting the flashing that means we have 1 minute left. Any last words?
Yeah, what's the flashing thing that you're talking about?
It's on the bottom of the computer screen. It tells me that 1 minute is counting down toward the top of the hour.
Awesome.
Yeah. So, anything to say before we go? Besides bye.
Okay, cool. Just saying, I'm going to be in Pella City College for the Rational Disease Testing the Sea. That's coming up first week of June, and I'm looking forward to talking to you guys. I'll talk more about it next time. But looking forward to being back in Knoxville or near the Knoxville area and talk to all you guys about the street epistemology hobby that I got.
Okay, sounds real good. And I'll just say bye. Don't worry about heaven or hell. Everybody's going to some other religion's hell, so don't sweat it. Live your life the best you can, and you'll come out good. You'll come out with a good life. Anyway, this is Dr. Five saying bye. Say bye, Wombat.
Bye, Wombat.
And we'll see you next week.
Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.